in your own time.
My name is Denise Goff, and you are listening to the Honest Actors Podcast.
You pay a lot of money for that somewhere,
wouldn't
you?
Seriously, I'm telling you. And I'm eating a biscuit, and you wouldn't have even known that I was eating a biscuit.
Hi, my name's Jonathan Harden, and you're listening to the Honest Actors Podcast, kind of. I suppose it is. This is a special edition. It's another interview with Denise Goff, which I recorded in October last year, and I promised I would release it if, on running the London Marathon, I was able to reach my funding target of £1,500 for the Actors Children's Trust. Now, I have subsequently run the marathon, and I have been able to hit that target, I'm delighted to say. And so, the time has come for me to keep my promise and release Denise. As I say, I recorded the interview back in October at Spotlight, just about a year after we had the chat, which would become episode one of this podcast, and which so many of you have enjoyed so much. So it's the first time I've gone back and done a second interview with the same actor, and as such, I suppose it makes for a different experience. And so to try and make this one fit in with those others, I, as much as possible, reflected back on the things that were said in that initial interview. So if you haven't already listened to it, it's not to say you won't enjoy this one, but it might be an idea to go back to listen to episode one, or it also appears as a unedited interview somewhere between series one and series two in the feed. So go back and listen to that, and then come back and you'll probably get a lot more out of this. Anyway, I hope you enjoy it. Thanks to everyone who donated and supported my marathon journey. The time, for those of you who care about such things, was 3 hours 27 minutes. And in spite of quite a few people telling me that I'd feel very differently once I'd fully recovered, I'm pretty happy to hang up the nipple plasters and cease preventative use of Imodium and know that I will never again apply Vaseline to my underarm area. In other words, you'll never again have a chance to donate to a charity as a result of me running 26.2 miles. So to take advantage of this final opportunity to donate to my campaign to raise funds for the Actors Children's Trust, and I've said on multiple occasions just how great a cause that is, all you have to do is go to justgiving.com/J Harden. Here is Olivier Award winner Denise Goff.
So the last time we spoke,
yep, I had nothing, I tell you.
Well, that was kind of the impression that certainly people took from a lot of it, was that you've been through a rough period. Mm-hmm. But one of the things you were saying was you were about to go in to rehearse a play at the National Theatre for the first time.
A little play called People, Places and Things.
Never heard of it. No, we did a shout out, and I think consequently, pretty much like, apparently by the way, since Gnome, Harry Potter sold out since the podcast
because of
went
this.
Out.
I'm yeah, telling I'm you, telling, it's my the, career it's the has changed because effect. Of the Honest Actors. If you really want your career to change, you need to get yourself onto it.
You said you were going to go into the National and you were going to cry from the second you got in.
Yeah, and I did.
And you did.
I did, and I honestly did. And I told Barbara Martin, the amazing Barbara Martin, who played my mum in the show, on the very first day when I met her, I was like shaking, and I said, she said, how are you, darling? And I said, oh, I don't know, I just think I'm going to cry. And she said, well, we must hold our nerve. And I said, no, I'm going to cry, and then maybe I'll try and hold my nerve at some point, but I doubt it. And I cried and cried and cried and cried and cried.
Did you... reflecting
and
back
got an Olivier for all that crying.
Alright, stop going on about the Olivier. You've mentioned it twice.
I'm going to mention it at the end of every paragraph.
I out of duty brought it up, but like I wish I hadn't now, to be honest with you. I wish I'd left it until the point where I've scheduled it in the questions. So if we could just pretend that hasn't
it's gonna
happened.
It's going to be in every question, because let's you're going to say, Denise, Olivier award winning actress.
I'm not,
can you
I refuse.
Question?
I know that was in the terms. As presented by your PR
also,
representative.
Also, this room. I'm not happy with this room. The next time we do it, we need a suite at the door.
This is becoming a bit of a nightmare. I wish I'd never
agreed. I am a total wanker now.
Can I ask the questions? And then let's assume we're going to do it like an interview where I ask questions and then you answer them. Uh-huh. And you're not allowed to mention the award.
Olivier Award that I won. Love it, so much fun. So okay, enough of that now.
Did you go through, you talked in the last interview about taking your anxiety out of the pot. There's many bits of that interview have been re-quoted back at me on Twitter and various settings. And we'll get to some of them. But you talked about taking your anxiety out of that pot. Did you go through moments of self-doubt in that rehearsal process? All that being said.
I don't think I did. You know, it was really weird. It was the most incredible experience. There was something kind of alchemical that happened in the room that meant I just never felt... Well, the thing is, I didn't know what it was going to be either. I was just really happy to be working at the National. So I didn't really have any reason to be anxious. I was just so joyful that my period of not working had come to an end and that I was working on something so amazing. I mean, it was just, there wasn't really any reason to feel anxious at all.
It felt like when we spoke last, you were determined that you were going to enjoy every second
of
it.
Yeah, and I really, really, really did. And some things happened that, you know, years ago would have absolutely terrified me, and they just didn't. I mean, I remember being really scared of one part of it. So I had a little bit of like about one part of it where she was on the phone, so I was on the stage on my own, and that to me is like, oh god, there's nobody to play with.
I didn't sign up for this.
Oh shit. So even in rehearsals, I remember I would rehearse that bit like and go, yeah, I'm finished that now, Jeremy. Let's move on to the next bit. I'll get it right another time. But I had so much faff to do. Like, I had to smoke a cigarette, be really hammered, snort a line of coke, do a really big punchline of a joke. Like, it was really, I thought, oh, and there was nobody to help me out if it went wrong, you know? And so my fear monster decided that was the bit that was going to, oh, it's going to be great. This is all going to be great.
If it was going to unravel at any point, that would be it.
Yeah. So then before the first preview, I was standing backstage and I said my prayer to whatever the hell it is. And I said, okay, well, I'm here now, and do whatever you need to do. I'm ready. Like, I've rehearsed it as much as I can rehearse it. We've teched it. It's all ready to go. I've got drunk enough water. I'm semi-warmed up because I have a weird thing about warming up. And I said, I'm ready. And so I went out on stage, and as I stepped on the stage, one of the trap doors broke. And so there was a huge hole in the stage. And I saw it, and I thought, okay, there's a hole in the stage there. Okay, carry on. So we carried on, went through the Chekhov bit, and then the hole was still there, and everybody came out on the stage, and I was thinking, how are they all not falling down this big massive hole? And then I went on to the scene with the phone call, and so I'm in the middle of the phone call, heart's going, and then the stage manager came out onto the stage and said, I'm really sorry, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to have to stop the show because of this huge big gaping hole in the floor because it's too dangerous. And I stopped for a moment, and then I said, ah, fuck, I was really good in that bit, to the audience, and then they all clapped, and I walked off stage, and I had such an epiphany backstage where I thought, oh my god, it's like the gods of the theatre had decided to show me that the stage could break in half, the show could be stopped in the middle of the part that I was most terrified of, and everything would be all right. And I went back out on the stage and I said to the audience, live theatre, ladies and gentlemen, in a really fancy voice. And then I carried on from the middle of the phone call. And from that moment, and like the stage manager, Johnny, came up to, or not the stage manager, but the crew member, Johnny, who had, like, they'd only had 2 days to work those traps. So he came up to me after the show, devastated. Like, oh my God, I'm so sorry, I can't believe it. And I was like, that was the best night I have ever had on stage, because from that moment on, then there was zero fear.
Yeah.
Because I just thought, well, it doesn't matter what goes wrong, it doesn't matter.
We saw it at the Dorfman, we're lucky enough to see it before the transfer, and
before my performance became huge, and with a very posh English accent.
Oh, I heard that.
Yeah, totally.
It looked exhausting, right? Did it ever get to the point where you felt like it was too much, where you were exhausted, yeah, and you thought, I don't fancy a show tonight as much as I'm really loving this?
Yeah, of course.
I'd love a wee night off to go and sit on my own and do some yoga, or like, how did the process change over the course of the run, or how did your feeling towards it?
Well, because at the National we had loads of time off, which was weird, where I was like, oh God, I need to just get a run at this. And then in the West End, we had, like, I think it was 15 weeks. And by the end of the 15 weeks, I was really tired, like, just physically really tired. And also, like, on one performance, I was ill, so I had to keep running off stage and, like, peeing into a bucket and stuff like that, you know. So physically, I was
better off stage than on, though.
Absolutely.
Really.
Yeah. But I had said I would take it that seriously that I would actually pee on stage. No, but you know, I had started, like, my body had started saying, okay, I'm pretty tired. And emotionally, I was tired. But I have quite a zhuzhy story of, I was in my dressing room in the interval of one of the shows.
Zhuzhy story.
Zhuzhy. This is really zhuzhy. And I'm going to drop a name that, like, the clunk is going to be really loud. But I don't care, because I can do that now. So I was talking to Jacob. That's not the name. So I was talking to him in the interval, and I said, I don't know how I'm going to do even the rest of this show, because I'm so tired. And he said, you need to talk to somebody who's done this before. And I had had a conversation with lovely Imelda Staunton. It's a name drop, but it's still not the name.
We're building.
We're building up. And who had done Gypsy, and she had been really helpful. But Gypsy was a different type of a show.
Is this the night you called me?
This, Jonathan Harden. No, anyway, so then I thought to myself, okay, I'm going to get my agent to ring Mark Ryland. Slam, slam, slam. See what happened there?
Never heard of him. Oh, he's the guy with the big ears from the film.
Yeah, massive, massive.
Huge ears. Spindly legs.
No, I decided that moment I'm going to ring my agent and ask her to see if Mark Rylance will have a cup of coffee with me, because I think Jerusalem was this thing that everyone talked about as having had the same type of, needed the same type of physicality and everything. And then, no joke, like 2 minutes later, the company manager came to my dressing room and said, Mark Rylance is in the audience and would like to come and see you after the show.
What are the chances?
What are the chances? Seriously. So again, I just
turns
feel like
out he was in every night.
Every
waiting
night
for
he was
the call.
There.
He was waiting for the
notes
call.
Getting notes on my performance to use in a performance of his own.
But he was just waiting for the call. He was like, when is she going to call me?
When is she mentally going to put out? But then, then he came up to the dressing room, he and his lovely wife, and they talked to me about, I said, I need to, like, I don't know how to sleep anymore. I don't know what to do anymore. Because the adrenaline, like at the end of a show like that, and then 800 people stand up crying and clapping for you, like you want to hold it, but it's like, I don't know how to do this, I'm so tiny.
So I remember there was something at the National where you were kind of cleaning the energy off, you didn't, that kind of thing.
So in the West End, Mark said that you have to close the energy off, you know, on the stage. That's what he would do. And so I developed a little thing that I do now, that I will always do at the end of a show, to let them, the girls, go, like let the women go, because I need to go home as myself, you know.
That's great.
And I never would have believed any of that old stuff, but well, I really, if that's, I now know that something, that theatre can be quite magic, you know. Like playing a part like that can be.
I'm going to then throw this next question, I think, and you probably will say no. Looks beautiful on you.
Thanks, I'm just checking my microphone there to make sure people aren't missing these pearls of wisdom.
I'm only recording my own voice. you'll be a faint echo. So the question is, did the whole process have any impact on your life outside of work in any kind of detrimental way?
No, not detrimental. No, it's been amazing. I mean, it has meant that I didn't see my family as much as I would have liked to. But no, and it's really cleared for me, made it even more clear for me that you cannot be an asshole in this business, because people are so nice to you when you have a break. Like, suddenly everyone is nice to me. Like, I'm going to have to start taking people out to dinner and seeing how they treat waitresses to find out what they're really like, because everyone is just nice to me now. And it's really lovely and everything, but it's now I look at people who behave badly as actors and I think, oh my God, you're basically, you don't have to do much for yourself anymore. Like, people are offering you things and asking you, would you like to do this, and paying you for stuff. And you think, don't be an asshole. Don't ever be an asshole. Like, be easy to work with. Make life easy for the people who actually have to work really hard, like crews and stuff. I'm learning how, crews, backstage people, you know, all of that.
On the subject of being nice, are people being nice to you? It has been one of those things from the outside looking on that has been striking about the past year,
having watched you from a distance as a friend.
Yeah, because you're not allowed to get too close to
me
anymore.
Well, that's it. Now there's too many people around you.
Well, I've had my security say. That weird guy I used to be friends with.
Can he stop looking at me, by the way?
His wife can hang out with me, because okay. She is my sister wife.
Well, but then, that's all fine. The question is, or the observation is, the question will follow, the observation is that you have, unlike a lot of people who have a break, as you put it, you have somehow managed to maintain a great sense of goodwill from other actors. It seems like you have the support of
that
the industry.
That has been phenomenal. That really has, like, the messages of... I realised recently, you know, on Facebook, people can request to send you messages. Mm-hmm. So I didn't know about that. I just have always seen this little red dot on my messages thing. So then about 2 weeks ago, I was finishing up something, a job one night, and I was looking at that thing, and somebody said, look, you've requests. So I clicked on it, and there were a lot. I mean, it took a lot. I was like, fucking hell, this is amazing. All these people sent me messages of congratulations, of love, support, kindness. I just thought, first of all, I can't reply to everyone, sorry, but a lot of actors and actresses have been, really kind. But I think it's because, you know, when somebody has had to work for it, though, it's like, I didn't skip any steps here. That's what Kush Jumbo said when she had major things happen for her. And she was asked, why do you think people are so happy for you? And she said, because I didn't skip a step. You know, because nowadays you see people skip all the steps. Yeah. And suddenly they're huge and they've done one thing, and then they become assholes. And
also, I mean, what's really interesting about that as well is I think everybody would choose to have done the steps.
Like, yeah.
I think sometimes not having done the steps leads to people being insecure.
Totally. And then they become assholes because they're afraid. And so they're desperate to be taken seriously as actors.
Whereas in your case, you've no real reason to feel insecure about it.
And also, I don't do it for the stuff around it. I do it to do good work. Like, the greatest thing that has happened over the past year for me is now I can choose to do really good work. So there isn't a... Like, I could easily have signed a lovely, you know... I could have done something else this year had I wanted to and become very famous, but I don't... I'm not interested in becoming very famous.
So there is a lot... You say you don't do it for the stuff around it, but there was a lot of stuff around that show. There was one Sunday, I remember... We got Sunday papers, and you were pretty much on the cover of every single supplement for every single Sunday paper. It's like we couldn't get away from you.
Except the Mail. I will never be on a supplement for the Mail.
On one occasion, you were in the photograph peeking out from what looked like a hedge.
I know.
So it almost looked like you were stalking me from the Sunday supplements.
So funny, because my friend's dad sent me a picture of a goblin peeking out from behind a tree and said, oh, look it. It's the same. This is the untouched version.
Yeah, basically.
It was so funny, that photo shoot, because we had to go down to the bank of the Thames, like, to what's called the beach, apparently, and the photographer was like, oh, you want to play with some things, you know, pick some things up, and I was like, what, like this used tampon, or this piece of fucking broken glass, like, what are you talking about? And he told me that there was another actor that actually jumped into the Thames, and I was like, because he wanted to be on the front cover of the supplement.
Not happening.
Not happening.
So while that's going on, your face is everywhere, peeking out from behind hedges.
It was a wall, actually. It was a mossy wall.
All right, whatever you
say. A mossy wall.
It looked like you were doing a wildlife program. What I was going to ask was, you said last time that it was really important that you don't get your self-worth from a job.
Yes.
It occurs to me that immediately after that, you did a job which probably is one of those jobs which does, by its very nature of how it did and all the stuff around it, affect your self-worth. Mm. So did that job make you feel happier? Did it make you feel more as a person? It's a horribly phrased question, but...
I don't think, not in the way that... Like, the thing about that job was, it was not a job, really. It was not, like, that doesn't... I know that sounds a bit weird, but it was about something so specific and so like, the greatest thing about it was it had such integrity as a piece of writing, and that's because of Duncan Macmillan. And then Jeremy was really clear about keeping it about that. And I remember the day that the reviews came out, because I always read reviews and always have, and I it was really weird. I was with my sister in a cafe and we kept reading these reviews and I was like, oh, fucking hell, this is quite full on, actually. And so that evening when I went into work, I saw Rufus Norris in the corridor and he asked me how I was. And it was really funny because you expect that people will go, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. But what I needed was people to check in with, okay, so this has gotten full on now. Are you all right? And I said to him, there's a line in the play that said, I just want to continue to be honest. And that was my thing for the whole entire run. I want to continue to be honest. Because if I had let the reviews get in, I'd have been done for. You have to keep bringing it back to the play. And so that night I went on and there was a palpable, I could feel in the audience. It was like, come on then, show us this fucking performance everyone's been talking about today in the papers. And I thought, no, you're going to get the play tonight and you're going to get the play every other night that you come to see it, because you can't, you just can't. If you start believing, if you notice actors that you would have seen years ago that were really brilliant before anybody knew who they were and then they become well known, the ones that can maintain the standard of work that they had before they became well known are the ones that aren't getting their esteem from it. But others, I'm sorry, I'm not going to mention names, but you just think, wow, what happened to you? And you think, oh, the hype happened to you.
You know what your thing is.
Yeah.
You know what people like. You want to give it to them.
Absolutely.
You know people love it, or you think people love it.
You have to be so, so careful. Yeah. And then before we opened in the West End, Jeremy was so clever because he invited an audience of 100 people to, or no, 50 people to the rehearsal room. All people that were in treatment. So people from the Priory, people from Freedom. And we did the play for them without any lights or sound, or anything. And we remembered what it was about because we were about to take that play into the West End. I was about to do this performance End. And so at the end of that run that we did for them, we stood in a big circle and we said the Serenity Prayer and we all cried and we remembered that the message of the play was the thing.
Okay, so just taking a quick leap on, and this is kind of a check-in. Last time I asked you, or I said about the agent who told me that an actor's only ever truly happy, blah, 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 blah. And I wondered if that's sometimes true for some people. In the 5 minutes after you get a call to say you've been shortlisted for an Olivier Award, what goes through your head?
Where are all the black people?
Honestly, that was...
I couldn't believe that Noma, Sharon D. Clarke, Marianne Jean-Baptiste, I could not believe that we were all white women in that category. And although I was like, oh, amazing, like, that's great, I also thought, oh, it's quite hard to get super hugely excited about being in a category that I felt didn't reflect the great work that happened on stage. I'm not saying anything against the actresses that were in the category, because, you know, Gemma is one of my good friends and I was fucking delighted for her. But there were women that were overlooked, and I believe they were overlooked because they were not white. And so then it became about, well, how do I redress that somehow and make an Olivier nomination really mean something, as opposed to, like, in what other industry? Like, my sister's a surgeon. There isn't an award ceremony every year for, you know... Look, I'm not doing it down, and I'm very grateful for it, and it definitely has changed things for me in my career. But if it had just been about an Olivier Award for me that night, it would have felt a bit gross.
Just to accept it and not say anything.
Yeah, not say anything. Like, the whole night, I mean, it was such a strange, strange thing to still be in a scenario where non-white actors and actresses are not being recognised at those types of things, because those types of things are seen by the masses, you know? So we need to be showing younger and young kids and younger people themselves in award ceremonies. If we're going to have these huge backslapping events, then you have to have a reflection of a real society, and we're still not getting it in. You know, I've moved into TV now, and I'm part of a fantastic production at the moment, which is just amazing. It's about the Black Power movement in London, and to the read through, I cried at the read through because I've never seen a more diverse company of people. And then I've moved into something else, and again, it's white. You know, it's so. There are still things. There is a lot to be done.
It's fair to say, though, that the awards that you were nominated for this year, for multiple reasons, ended up being fairly, not controversial is the wrong word, but politicised.
Mm.
Do you think what you said about the Olivier, do you think that will have an impact?
I don't know, but I would not be able to forgive myself if I didn't say something. It's like when I saw the Oscar nominations and I thought, okay, well, this is fucking terrible, but if every single person who wins says one thing, if they all make their speeches about the lack of diversity, then something is happening. But nobody did. And I thought, everyone is so desperate to be part of the gang. And they think this piece of metal that, you know, it's lovely and everything, but There are better things that you can use your position for.
So what are they? And what I mean, I think what's really interesting is that you have, like, well, just as a summary of this, I think your Twitter bio says something like, I'm here to talk about women and equality in the arts, right?
Yeah.
What kind of things have you been getting involved in, or what are the big movements or groups that you're trying to
support? So in Ireland, I was so inspired by the Waking the Feminist movement, because, you know, they took on our National Theatre because there was no female playwrights in their 100-year anniversary. And then it opened up this huge thing about how women are written out of the arts, you know, in all areas of the arts, you know. And then over here you have equal representation for actresses, which I've been involved in, and it's about how we, you know, it's like I talked to you during the week about, but this thing that I'm doing at the moment, for example, I am the lead role, and the lead role is, the name of the series is a female name, it's my name, and yet when they announced it, the BBC press release was that, you know, but then other publications took it on and turned it into, you know, the more famous man that's in it leads this company. And I tweeted, which I only use Twitter really for political to kind of do. So if I'm going to have to do it, then I'll do it. But I'll only do it to kind of, I don't know, have some sort of a voice. And
Facebook,
so
on the other hand, you use for
my friends.
Cat videos.
Yeah, cat videos, donkeys, goats, all of that. So with Twitter, so I said, I think you'll find, it was the Daily Express, I think, and I said, I think you'll find it's me that's leading the cast, because what if I don't say anything, then that sort of thing just carries on.
So
and
what
it's
happened
a more
under that? Did the Daily Express or Daily Telegraph, did they take
it? No, but like 500 people retweeted it, and then it ended up in the Mail. But again, reported in such a way that, you know, nobody gives Denise Goff second billing, and it's like, it's not about that. This is not an ego thing.
It's about how
we report about women's achievements, and why is my achievement as a woman who has 15 years
actually the Mail's interpretation of it is worse than the initial mistake.
Yeah, and I think that it's so it's derogatory, and also I think it's bad for men too. I don't think it's very good for the guy who they talk about, you know, because it's like, it's sort of, I don't know, all of my male friends are feminists, so I don't really know anybody who agrees with, you know, I just think that we are still being reported about in a way that is not empowering, and so we have to address that ourselves. And that means that I might become somebody who gets a reputation of being difficult, because it's easier to put a woman in that category than to say, oh, she's got a point, actually, hang on. The whole series is about the central female figure. It's not about her in relation to the man. It's the man in relation to her. Like, so, yeah. So that happening was really shocking. I was like, oh, wow, it really... It really happens, but I'm not going to shut up about it. And the thing is for me as well, Jonathan, is that if it was decided that I was just too much like hard work to get a job in TV, or the work dries up, and that's fine. It's really fucking fine. You know, I only ever wanted to be a theatre actress anyway. It's fantastic that I'm getting access to the kind of scripts I am now on screen, and I'm really, really happy about it. But I will not be told that I have to shut up about things that I feel strongly about in order to be allowed to be on telly.
What have you learned about the industry in the past year following on from that?
Oh, I've learned that it's really fickle. I've learned that you have to keep your head when all about you are losing yours and blaming it on you. You really do. Like, you, and also I have to be really careful of, you know, people projecting an image onto me of what I am, and then by, you know, me think, because Jesus, like, people had such a connection to that beautiful play, but if I was to get involved in too much of that, I would think I'm like a god or something. You have to be really careful of, the industry will do this huge thing with you, and you think, hang on. Like, I had a girl come up to me, I was having an argument with my boyfriend on the phone, and I was really upset, and I thought everything was falling apart. And then this young girl came up, and she bowed and gave me a note. And I wanted to say to her, you must never bow to anyone. Especially if you could hear what has just happened in my life on this phone, you know? I don't know. So I learn about the industry that there's a lot of smoke and mirrors, and there's a lot of, you know, yeah, like, people make stuff up about you. And I think also there's a, you know, I've got a job at the National next year doing a beautiful play, and I know that people are thinking, how's she going to follow it? How's she going to follow what she just did? But I'm not going to.
Well, like I said, I was going to ask, do you feel the pressure of, that's Denise Gough from People, Places and Things, she better be fucking good?
Absolutely. But I can feel that that's happening, but it's whether I choose to go along with it or not. I'm playing Harper because I want to play Harper, and I want to work with Russell, and I want to be in a play that's directed by Marianne Elliott. If people don't like it, it's not my problem. Like...
To follow on from that question then, what have you learned about yourself over the past year, if anything?
I've learned that I really like nice things, and that I really like earning money, and that I really...
We always knew you liked nice
things.
Yeah,
you see, it's funny though, but when you're really poor for a long time...
You still bought them, Denise, sometimes.
I did still buy them, yeah. But now, like, now I'm going to be so broke. No, I've learned that I really am about the work. I'm really happy about it, because I didn't... Yeah, it's a really nice thing to go, oh, brilliant. I didn't go to the Olivier's and like, want to go to the party. And like, I didn't want to do that. I went for a burger with my beautiful boyfriend instead, and, like, had a night with my family and had a night with the cast. Like... I'm so glad that when it came to it and all the shiny stuff was there on offer, I was all right with actually, I'm going to go and get a burger.
Yeah.
That felt good.
Just to kind of, I suppose...
But I do like nice things.
I'm trying to make this still an interview that feels like it fits with the others. One of the things that I was going through was thinking, how does that question apply now? So if you were to go back to Denise in... I think it was July last year we spoke, and based on everything that's happened in the intervening months.
It's only a year, that's bizarre.
So it's a year since, really, the show started September, right? So it is pretty much a year since that it happened. So if you could go back a year and offer Denise at that point, day one of rehearsals, thinking, oh, I'm probably going to cry a lot, I'm going to try and hold my shit together, and you could offer that Denise some advice, or just to kind of like, this is going to happen, be ready, and maybe handle it differently, what advice might you give?
Do more yoga. Do more yoga, like look after your body a bit better. Because I think we might do it again at some point. I don't think she's done. And so going back and going forward, I would just say, you know, it's really imperative that you eat really well, that you drink loads of water, that you make time for yourself. Yeah, be really, really gentle with yourself. That's what I would say. Because I think it was just so much to do all the time. Like, if we do it again, I will literally lie in bed most of the time when I'm not on stage, you know? But there was so much stuff around it this time.
You'll be that I can see you being
Oh, my God. And I've bought the most amazing mattress. So, you know, I'm ready. I'm ready to lie in bed.
Or I can see you being the actress that spends all day in her...
A spa.
I was thinking more of a dressing gown that doesn't have clothes that aren't costume.
That's me. That's what I'm heading for.
That's where you're going, right?
Absolutely. Yep.
I'm going to ask a question and a few questions actually on the trot, which are identical to questions I asked you last year. Are you successful?
Yeah.
I'm not going to argue with that. I can't. Have you been lucky?
Yeah.
Have you had, or do you believe in, big breaks?
It's tough on that, isn't it? Because I guess I have to. Because it was a bit of a break, wasn't it? It was a big break, yeah. But they all were. I don't know. I believe in a series of breaks. So,
yeah. Don't look at me for the answer. I'm asking the questions.
Yeah, fucking hell, Jonathan.
Fucking hell, you know my dumbest money roommate. It's like, try to turn the question back on him. Is that what you're looking for?
Yeah.
No. Not finally, but are you in anything at the minute?
Yes, I'm in loads of fucking things at the minute. This is great. Yes, I'm in a show called Gorilla about the Black Power movement, which is fucking brilliant. And then I'm in Paula, the BBC thing.
What's about that guy?
It's about, there's an actor who is leading the... Yeah, go fuck yourself, Jonathan. I will be supported... by three wonderful male actors in that. And then I'll go back home to the National.
And the only questions I have remaining to ask is, quite selfishly, and if you could, even if the answer isn't what I'm looking for, if you could possibly work out what I am looking for and give me some kind of ego massage and or boost.
Okay.
Did anybody mention the Honest Actors interview to you?
Everybody. I swear to God, it's a very strange thing, right? Because it was like, again, one of those alchemical things.
You're doing really well,
by the
way.
You were very clever, how you fucking, you shifty, that I knew it. You saw that happened, and when you kind of linked these two moments together, which was amazing. So I feel like I had those moments with you.
Because I didn't know you were going to do people and places and things when I interviewed you.
That's right. But I think when it came out, it felt to me like the Honest Actors podcast and me had our big break at the same time, which felt really lovely. And so I feel like it's like this thing that is alongside me on this, which is why I thought we should do it again.
Somebody said to me, because I don't post a lot about jobs, or very rarely, if I ever, post about jobs on Twitter. So I got a theatre job, and so I did post about it because it was like, oh, I'll post about this. And somebody sent me a private message and said, oh, it's so great that you're working. It feels like a victory for the Honest Actors community.
That's true.
And I figured, if that's what it was like when I got a gig for 8 weeks in Wales playing a supporting role, then it must be kind of a hundredfold for you, because people genuinely feel they've invested.
Yeah, but what you've done though by creating this thing, and I've said it to you over the year and sent you text messages, you're not good at shut up and listen to me.
Podcast.
No, but this is what you've done is created, it's like AA for actors. So what you've done is you've given a forum for actors and actresses to identify with each other. And identification is the most healing thing that we have. Like, the amount of people that I have talked to over the last year who have been really honest about how they're feeling. You know, so it all stems from this idea that let's be more honest with each other. And so I had a friend say to me, it's fucked, I'm fucked, and it's really difficult. And 2 weeks later, she got two jobs. And then another guy sent me an email after seeing the show, a friend of mine, and he was like, I don't know how I feel about being an actor anymore, and really, really open. And he's now got a fucking amazing job. And it's like we've all started this community that you've helped create. We do reach out and talk to each other in a way that is really, really helpful. And it's the way that people, I think the industry is frightened of us having that kind of identification, because it's kind of in their interest to keep us scared, isn't it? But if we talk to each other, just the feeling you get of having someone go, I know, man, I fucking know, that feels so crap. Like, it unlocks something. You don't feel on your own anymore. You don't feel like you're mad. And that's what this thing, this community, like, I got a beautiful note from one of the ushers, an usher that works in the West End, who said something about, you're like the hero of all the ushers in the West End. And I was like, oh my God, that's amazing, that this idea of all these young people who are probably putting themselves through drama school, you know, who work at the theatre, have all kind of listened to these podcasts and stuff and like thought,
Come on, Denise. But
it means, it's like in athletics, you have people that you can get behind and everything. And if I am that for people, then fucking great. That's really, really brilliant. Because I think what you've opened up is what it's like to really be an actor. Not, I got a big break fresh out of drama school and now I'm super famous. That's a whole different thing, which comes with its own stuff. But for the majority of us who have had to go back into waitressing after we've done a gig somewhere, or are all trying to pay our rent.
I was a terrible waitress.
Oh, I know, darling. You didn't even have the boobs for it, you see. No, I had, when I read those, when I know it is, it's a terrible thing to say. That's like a Trump thing to say. Let's not even get started on him.
No.
But like, I read the blogs and stuff, like Katie Ellen Salt does amazing blogs for you. Like, she's really articulate. And the high five one that you wrote recently, we should all be high fiving each other. The fact that we are even auditioning, you know, in Sinead Matthews' podcast when she said she left the audition and she was like laughing at how shit she was. When I listened to that,
that's still one of my favourite moments.
I know, because you think, we never used to talk to each other like that, you know, maybe a
never
small
admit.
Pocket of people you would talk to. But now actors and actresses are talking to each other and it's really, really special. So yes, everyone talks to me about the Honest Actors podcast, and but not just about the Honest Actors podcast, the thing that it has mushroomed into, which is a fucking support group for actors, because we need it.
That's cool. Well, thank you for
You're
giving
so
your
welcome.
Time, for
Look
being
at that.
So kind. You found a feather.
Which means there's an angel.
Or
shut up. Okay. Don't ruin it, you cynical, twisted bastard.
Thanks. On that note, thanks for giving your time again.
Oh, so such a pleasure.
I look forward to doing the 10-year anniversary interview whenever I have
next
to
year. We're going to do that next year.
Whenever though. I have to speak to you through an intermediary. Some kind of priestess.
Yeah, some fucking, you'll have to run a gauntlet. You'll have
basically,
to
yeah,
no eye contact, all
yeah,
of that. Oh, well, I'm heading there, don't you worry.
And, you,
and I feel
and
like I should go there just so I can provide everybody then with my fall from grace, you know?
Yeah.
So everyone is behind me and then I'll become a complete bitch and everyone will be really disappointed and then I'll have to say sorry publicly.
And that's it for this very special edition of the Honest Actors podcast. I will be back later in the year with further interviews. But before I go for now, I feel I should say that the only reason I left that last section in, which is pretty much a love-in, where Denise talks about how positive an impact this particular project has had, is because I've had one of those wobbles recently where, as Denise put it about one of her friends, I don't know how I feel about being an actor anymore. And that's partly because I haven't worked for a while. it's partly because, I suppose, of my age and thinking there are lots of other things I could do. I'm wondering if I don't do it now, will it be too late to change my mind and all that kind of stuff. And I have to say that I ran the marathon and about 15 or 16 miles in was thinking, God, this might be the last thing I do as an actor. This might be my last act as an actor to run the marathon for the Actors Children's Trust. However, I was editing this interview of Denise's and we came to that last section, which for all intents and purposes, like I say, is, very flattering lovely to hear, but entirely unnecessary and something I would have otherwise excluded from the podcast. And it kind of made me feel a lot better. I say kind of, it made me feel a lot better. And part of the reason why I started the podcast was because I was in the doldrums a couple of years ago, feeling very similar. And as soon as I started to have the chats, the very first interview I did with Simon Darwin, subsequently with Tom Goodman Hill, I started to feel better and I started to feel like I wasn't alone. And as I say, I started to feel like that again recently. And this little bit of editing and listening to Denise talk about her experiences and those of her friends kind of made me feel like I wasn't alone again. So that's why it's been left in. It made me feel better. I hope it makes other people feel better too. But, you know, as they say, enough about me. I hope everybody's good. I hope you're working. And if you're not working, I sure as hell hope you're happy. And like I say, I hope to be back with more interviews later this year. Have a good summer.